Romeo India Whiskey. My call is? My name is Dick. And at this time, we begin the TechNet on Limark, which we've done for the last 33 years, since 1982. This will be TechNet number... I got that said right. This will be TechNet number 1614. A little bit later, you'll be hearing Space Report number 213 of the series by Paul WS2N. As you guys have heard so often, it's a gathering of the clan of people who are curious about ham radio, want to know a little bit more about it, wireless products in general, 27 different kinds of ham radio. And how does that tiny little signal in the case of QRP goes a darn many miles through absolute emptiness of space? And how it does that? There are people who are enthralled by that mystery and want to know more about it. How in the world does Mother Nature do that? There's another kind of ham radio operator that doesn't worry about those details, buys a rig and gets on and talks about whatever his favorite subject are. Both kinds are welcome to the hobby. But we here at the Technical Net tend to favor the kind who are more curious and want to know a little bit more about the details of how all this stuff works. By way of the questions and answers live on this program, they find out a lot of that information. If you're not able to stay up for the 4 hours that the TechNet runs, 8 o'clock until midnight, you can always listen to all the past TechNet, and even this one, a few days downrange, when it's recorded on the website by Mike, KC2NJI. And that website is amateurradio.tangovictor, www.amateurradio.tangovictor. 10 solid years of...
Repeater, timeout.
10 solid years of TechNets are recorded there at amateurradio.tangovictor. So choose the right year, the right month, the right week, and you can play back 4 hours worth of recordings. For the first 6 years or so, they were even cross-referenced. You choose a subject like standing wave ratio, and you get a list of all the days and hours in which that particular subject was discussed. There's another website, that was mic number one. There's a mic number two, K1MJN, Mike Julian Mike, who has a website of limarktechnet.com. And there you'll find additional information, pictures of antennas, towers, and graphs that are available for instance, the Smith chart and the Brown and Woodward curves that I frequently talk about, and articles. So those two websites, mic number one and mic number two, do a lot to support this TechNet. There's a very loose schedule we follow, in which for the first hour or so, we take check-ins from people who do have a question or comment for the net, and we take them in order, and we discuss their particular question or comment. That's followed by John, KC2WGB, who maintains the mailbag, and he also monitors Echolink. So if you have trouble getting in because you're a long distance away and we don't give enough space, by way of John monitoring the Echolink, he knows about that and brings it to our attention. The mailbag is followed by Paul, WS2N, who gives us the space report. So that's the loose schedule. When you check in, we'd like you to give us your call letters, your name. I repeat that name because I'm so forgetful on names. Followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. You need not check in because you're listening. There are lots of nets where great big long lists of people listening and check in. After 33 years, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven anymore. We believe there's a reasonably large audience out there of people who are sufficiently curious to either listen or sign in with questions. Another thing to worry about is that there is no such thing as a question that's not up to our level. Don't worry about asking what you think is a dumb question. Our philosophy is that the so-called dumb question represents the biggest gap between what the person knows and what he would like to know. So therefore, we welcome dumb questions, and you won't be ridiculed because of that. We may also have a check-in with reference to national parks on the air tonight, and you may hear a little bit about that. A significant event took place there
message, Dick.
Go right ahead, John.
I just want all to be aware we're starting to get rain here, and we have some thunder and lightning in Staten Island, and it appears to be moving west. I don't know if you're getting any precipitation out there yet, but just be on the lookout for that. Back to you, Dick. KC2WGB.
John, most weather moves to the east. Are you saying this weather happens to be moving to the west? A little unusual?
Out of the west, I'm sorry. Out of the west, moving east.
Okay, sounds like we will be getting it eventually here in Long Island. According to Newsday, four people were hit with lightning in the last couple of days, and one of them died. So, lightning can be pretty serious at times. And whenever I climb my tower, I make sure I check on the weather. I don't want to be on my tower if lightning strikes it. Even though it's a well-grounded structure and I might be safe, I'm not willing to push my luck. So we're going to take check-ins right now. Please give me your call letters and your name, followed by the word yes or that you do have a question or a comment. K2LIW listening.
John, you have all so much test equipment. I have been putting off getting a digital storage oscilloscope because there's so many choices out there. Recently, I have seen something about the Analog Discovery 2, the successor to the original Analog Discovery, of course. John, do you have any opinion whether this is a serious test instrument that I should buy as a digital storage oscilloscope? WB2GXM.
Very fine, Rich. Let me get the beep. And what Rich is referring to, if you go to QRZ.com and dial in WB2GSM, you will see Instrument Room Heaven. John is down to his last few hundred pieces of test equipment, some of which is in a warehouse and some of which is in his two separate side-by-side laboratories. This guy is equipped. So go right ahead with your answer on this one, John. KC2WGB. Take your time. K2RIW the TechNet.
KC2 32 WGB. Good evening, Dick, Paul, everyone on the net. Okay. Now, storage oscilloscopes. You can go digital or you can go analog. Okay. You can get them reasonably cheap depending on what frequency range you're looking for and the bandwidth. Now, if you look on things like eBay, and you can see these storage oscilloscopes in about $300 price range that are about the size of a pack of cigarettes. You plug them into your computer and it has leads. And I have friends that use them. I don't particularly use those, but they do work. But if you're looking for something that's going to go up to, say, 500 meg or a gig, then you got to get large frame, mainframe stuff. And that is also available used at very reasonable prices. Tektronix makes some very nice ones, depending on what you want to spend. And I would say used, you can go anywhere from $12,000 down to almost any amount.
Go right ahead, Rich, with any further questions you might have.
Well, thank you, John. John, I believe I need to be near a window with this thing. I really have to get this other rig going. Yeah, I was looking at the Analog Discovery 2. The Analog Discovery 2 is less than $300. But it seems to be only good up to 10 megahertz or so. And I'm not sure I should spend the money on that. I should still keep on looking, as you say, John, for the real oscilloscopes as quote-unquote WBTGXM.
K2YO.
Okay, I've got a comment about what frequency range you need on an oscilloscope. But Bernie first, I bet you, Bernie, you didn't think you needed a 300 megahertz scope for an awful lot of your career. K2 Yankee Oscar, K2RIW, go ahead, Bernie.
Yeah, actually, when I was working on the road, I was carrying a 200 megahertz Tektronix analog scope. Anyway, what I wanted to comment, I just recently purchased a Regal 4-channel 100 megahertz digital storage scope. I've been very pleased with it. The company is ham friendly. They show up every year at the Big Hamvention in Dayton, and I've been nothing but pleased with it. It is a digital scope. It is, you know, has the limitations of a digital scope, but for what I'm using it for, which is to catch events and test equipment and that kind of thing, for computer control testing and things, so I need to see an event as it goes by, capture the waveform, and be able to analyze it. It is invaluable for that. The fact that you've got full digital built in, I've been very pleased. Now, Dick, I'd love to hear your explanation on frequency, because obviously the gentleman who asked the original question has to decide just how fast of a scope he needs. In my case, I'm looking at things that are happening measured in milliseconds, so I don't really need speed. K2YO.
And I've done a fair amount of work on ham radio at 10 gigahertz. And is there a 10 gigahertz oscilloscope? I could say yes and no. If you're willing to spend big bucks for a sampling oscilloscope, yes, they go to 20 and 40 gigahertz. But when it comes to a real and non-sampling analog oscilloscope, a couple of hundred megacycles is the highest they can go, because that's the fastest you can write on the phosphor of the screen. But then the next question is, do you really need that much bandwidth? For a whole lot of years, the oscilloscope I used only went to a megacycle or so. That allowed me to look at a 455 KCIF strip directly, and whenever I needed to look at higher frequencies than that, the exact waveform of the higher frequency I didn't need. I could put that waveform into a crystal rectifier and look at the envelope on the oscilloscope. It's the envelope of the higher frequencies that I cared about. So, in my experience, throughout a lot of those years, only a couple of megacycles was required for most of the work that I did. I will admit now that there was some pretty fancy, you would call it computer plus radio combinations where much more elaborate waveforms are being viewed. And in some cases, you got elaborate waveforms like 16 quad amplitude modulation, which to really display that requires something called a constellation diagram test set, which is a lot more than an oscilloscope. So, do you really need tens and hundreds? 90% of the time, and the few times that you think you need it, a simple crystal rectifier where you look at the envelope of that RF waveform on your oscilloscope is more than good enough. That's an opinion, but I'm a primarily analog person with not a hell of a lot of digital experience, so my opinion may be colored in that manner. Let me pass it over to John, because he probably has some more comments on the oscilloscopes he owns that go to hundreds of megacycles, and how often did you really need to see the exact waveform of 146 megacycle signal, the real RF waveform, not just the envelope. KC2WGB, K2RIW, go ahead, John.
KC2WGB. Okay, Dick, the lowest sweep rate I have is 500 meg. I don't have anything under that anymore, but I have things that go up to 1 gig, 2 gig, like the LaCroix and things like that. I don't think they're necessary. I use them for specialty stuff that I do, but I've found that anything relatively inexpensively, you can purchase up to 300 megahertz in a Tektronix scope. I wouldn't buy HP. I don't particularly care for them, but, you know, if you prefer HP, you can buy it. A little more difficult because I'm very used to Tektronix. But 300 meg, and I doubt if you'll be using it over 150 meg. Like Nick says, once in a while you want to look at a raw signal at 150 megahertz. Well, you can do that. Is it going to be required? Depending on the ancillary equipment you have, like detectors and things like that, you can always work around those issues. But I think if you're looking to purchase new, then you got to really pay attention. And like Bernie, Rigel, by the way, makes excellent stuff. A little pricey for what they're giving you, but it works well and great support. But if I were you and you're looking for used, I would look over eBay and some of the sites, some of the auction things, and you can get a Tektronix up to 300 meg, probably for under $500. That works beautifully.
Yeah, many ham radio operators have a philosophy that they're willing to open up the cover, do troubleshooting. They're willing to buy a used piece of equipment. Maybe it's got a couple of stages that are not working quite right. Maybe the front panel is dented and scratched. Cosmetics doesn't really work. It's operation you're looking for. Almost every piece of ham radio equipment I own is used. And although I've had a couple of failures, even brand new equipment, you're going to have failures. But if you're willing to do troubleshooting, you can save yourself an awful lot of money, like a 2-to-1, 3-to-1 sometimes in the price of brand new. You take, for instance, a 2-meter all-mode rig. They sell for numbers like $1,500. An oldie but goodie, in my opinion, is a Kenwood TS-711A, 1990 vintage. It's got the cleanest synthesizer you've ever seen. It's got a built-in 110-volt power supply. You can run it on 12 volts or 110. On the used market, you can buy that for $250 or so. The equivalent nowadays is $1,500. And repairing it is quite easy. It's you open up the top cover or the bottom cover, and everything on that motherboard is nicely exposed. Let me drop. You get a nice schematic diagram with the owner's manual. There are websites that will give you even the service manual on it. No parts in there are very expensive, except maybe the main microprocessor. So used equipment, you can get a lot for your money. And this club, among other clubs, has people like Andy, the V2CDL, and others that can repair anything. So even if you run into a little trouble on repairing it, you can go to a fellow club member and get a repair. So when it comes to an oscilloscope or a ham radio piece of equipment, I like used because of the money you can save. But that's me. There are people who want to make sure that they don't have any cigarette smell in the unit and that the front panel is perfectly clean, and some people really appreciate that. So it's your choice. Do come back, Bob, when you do make your purchase, and let us know what you purchased, because almost everybody who is slightly serious about electronics usually comes to the conclusion, gee, I'd like to see that waveform. I'd really like to have an oscilloscope. So that's one of the Cadillac pieces of equipment on many people's mind. And so you're in a boat with a lot of other people who would like an oscilloscope, and they might not have a real deep pocket, so we'd like to hear what you finally settle on, Rich. Yes. Raleigh, B2, Golf X-Ray Mike, K2 Raleigh W, you got it, Rich.
QRW and the TechNet, Rich, WB2JXM. Thank you, John. Thank you, Rich, for your opinions and for your input. I will be doing more research, and I'll let you know. WB2JXM out.
Very fine, Rich. And when you're up to that microphone and talking loud, you sound good. And you were nice and clean. You got a good location for that, any doggy. Mark the spot on the ground on that spot. You can go back there. Okay, the next person was John, KC2, Sierra Hotel Oscar. You've got it, John, K2RIW, the TechNet.
K2RIW, KC2FHO. Happy to hear that there's some discussion about test equipment here this evening, since I had two ideas for what to bring up to the net this evening, so I'll go with the test equipment related idea here. So I mentioned previously on some previous nets many months ago that I purchased an HP 4192A. That is a LF analyzer, and that's a very interesting item. I haven't had a chance to really play with it yet. But what I'd like to do is kind of describe what the capabilities are, and maybe you and I guess it's John could maybe tell me what you would use this item for, or if you think it's useful as a ham radio shack piece of equipment at all. So does that sound amicable? K2RIW, KC2SHO.
Absolutely, John, fire away. And for anybody who goes to QRZ.com and you dial in KC2SHO, again, you're going to see ham radio heaven. You're going to see one hell of a nice radio shack, very well equipped. So once again, give us the model number of that piece of equipment. Tell us what you know about it. Maybe John and others can tell you ways of getting rich quick with it. Go right ahead, John, KC2SHO. K2RIW, the TechNet.
As always, thank you for the flowers. I've made some changes, and there are more on the way, so maybe I'll get around to putting some other photos up. But these days, I'd rather get stuff done than take a lot of photos. Okay, so it is an HP 4192A, and that is described as a LF, as in low frequency, impedance analyzer. It goes from 5 hertz to 13 megahertz. And here's the key things I pulled from the manual. Because it has a wide range of impedance parameters, gain, phase, and group delay, improves efficiency and quality in development and production of components and semiconductors, complete network analysis of devices, filters, crystals, audio video equipment, evaluation of the impedance characteristics of their circuit components. Can do 5 measurements per second, 1 measurement per second in average mode, 10 measurements per second in high speed mode. Can measure the frequency, OSC level. Don't know why I left that as a as OSC, because now I don't remember what that meant. And I can do, it says it can measure DC bias voltage for impedance only. I could try to find more, but that's what I wrote down that was, to me, were the key items from the manual. Does that give enough, or should I look for more and maybe bring it up on any following net, maybe? So I hope there's enough information there. K2RIW, KC2SHO.
You've given us some very good information there, John. One quick question I have for you before I proceed with a pronouncement. My guess is a pronouncement. Of all the displays it has, is there a mode where it will take the data being measured and display it on a Smith chart? Does it have a Smith chart display? Does it also have a XY display where horizontal axis is frequency and vertical axis is impedance? So when it comes to displaying the data, is the display only a digital display? Does it have an oscilloscope or a picture screen? And roughly what kind of pictures do you believe it can give? Because that will highly color the answer I'm about to give. back to you, John. KC2SHO. In Mount Laurel, I think it is. Yeah, Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Way out there. You sound good. K2IW and TechNet.
Yeah, Dick, the display is, I don't know if it does alpha, so I'm going to say it's numeric only. There's three different numeric display panels. And no, it does not, if it does do anything with Smith charts, it does not do it directly on the display of the devices. It does not have a an XY type display, as you said. And we're coming in through IRLP, so coming directly into your system the digital way. We'd love to have an antenna. Well, actually, I have an antenna that may be able to reach you directly. And we hope we can do that someday, but I don't have it mounted and on the rotor yet. So one day we dream of checking in VORF only. K2RIW, KC2SH.
I'm taking a quick look here. And between you and me, according to QRZ.com, is 103 miles. I'm 20 miles from the repeater. You and I are in line. Therefore, you're 80 miles from the repeater. A small Yagi on the roof of your house, vertically polarized, aimed at this repeater, I give you a 95% chance you can get in here very nicely with RF. And when it comes to a small Yagi, you can either buy it or you can homebrew it with a coat hanger wire by going to the beautiful website of Kent, WA5EJB, Whiskey Alpha 5 Victor Juliet Bravo .com. Go to that website, you go to the second or third page of inexpensive Yagis. Very high performance Yagis for a couple of dollars can be built with coat hanger wire. He's very famous for those. So one of those would get you here directly with RF. Let me drop. Now, I was hoping that you had a display of XY, impedance versus frequency, or Smith chart. That would be a really Cadillac instrument if it could do that. However, where it can display exact impedance, exact Q, phase angle, you have what really is an early version of a vector network analyzer where you can measure phase and amplitude. You can therefore measure loss tangent, you can measure Q, you can measure reactance of any kind of component from 5 hertz to 13 megahertz. So you could use that by measuring the impedance going into your transmission line to an antenna. Let me drop. You could measure the exact impedance that your transmission line presents in the shack. Knowing how many feet of transmission line you've got and what impedance it has and what loss per foot it has, loss per 100 feet, you can then calculate from that, without too much difficulty, the exact impedance of your antenna as if you were on the top of a tower on the other end of the transmission line measuring the antenna. That piece of equipment will let you do that. So it really is the early version of a vector network analyzer. When you can measure phase and amplitude of impedance, that's the magic ingredient that tells you almost everything you want to know. It's the modern day equivalent of a guy with a slide rule and 5 years of experience with a slotted line making very precise measurements of impedance. That's what the Brown and Woodward curves did. The two guys at, I think, Bell Labs in 1945 measured all the impedances, resistive component and reactive component, of all possible monopoles, all diameters, all frequencies, all lengths. Beautiful set of data. The so-called Brown and Woodward curves. You've heard me say so often. Some people are tired of hearing me saying it. It's a well-kept secret. Let me drop it. Mr. Brown and Woodward had that machine that's in your hands right now, John. It would have saved them a good fraction of a man year's work they had to put into making those curves. So you can have a lot of fun with that. Measuring an unknown inductor, you can find out what is its inductance, what is its resistive component at the operating frequency. Therefore, what's its Q, what's its reactance, a capacitor. I don't know if you can make meaningful measurements of a diode with that, but input impedance of amplifiers, output impedance under certain conditions of an amplifier. So, as I said, it's a poor man's equivalent of a modern-day vector network analyzer. People used to think measuring phase at radio frequencies was out of the question. phase up to 100 gigahertz. So back to you on that one, John. How long have you owned it? And hopefully it didn't cost a lot of money. KC2, SHO, K2RIW in the TechNet. You got it, John.
Yeah, real nice and very interesting. Let's see, I probably bought it maybe in springtime or no, it was still a bit chilly out, so maybe even in the fall, in, you know, before spring or very early spring anyway. Yeah, I think I paid $300 for it, if I recall correctly. I do see that they typically go for much more than that. I'm wondering about what kind of specialized types of measurements that it could do. And does it? And I'm wondering if it does anything beyond what a modern. Well, I would say no, but just wondering, you know, if there's anything specialized that it should do, considering it seems to still bring some big dollars on some of the sites I've looked at. Now, I'm not really sure that anyone's actually selling for that amount, but you know, just looking at general, eBay and. Test equipment sites, it does look like it has quite a bit more value to it. And I'm wondering what a ham radio operator could do with some of the analysis of like they say, crystals, filters, an evaluation of the components in the circuit, you know. If we were repairing radios, would this be of any use to prove out, you know, the low-frequency components like a local oscillator, things like that. I guess that's where my mind is going with it anyway. I hope I didn't miss any question there. K2RIW, KC2SHO.
The total number of people signing it tonight was slightly light, so you're going to get lots of time, John, not to worry. You're not keeping us too long. Yes, if you were building a crystal lattice filter, for instance, a very high-performance filter for maybe a single sideband homebrew IF filter, for instance, and you want to assemble four crystals, all on the same frequency, all on the exact same Q and whatever, or the frequency resonance characteristic, that machine will let you measure that. If you had an LC filter, and you want to measure the phase delay, the group delay of the signal flowing through the filter, input impedance, output impedance, bandwidth, Q, that thing would let you measure it. So, most crystals that are used for high-quality oscillator for knowing exact frequency and one high spectral purity, most of those crystals are on 10 megacycles or lower, and now with that machine, you can measure the exact quality of that 10 megacycle crystal. What is its resistive component? What's its reactive component at each frequency of interest? I'm guessing that this machine might have a frequency synthesizer that allows you to put it on an exact frequency, and maybe you can move it one hertz at a time while measuring a very precise 10 megacycle reference oscillator crystal, for instance. Let me drop. And you can plot the exact impedance of that crystal every one hertz or every 10 hertz around the 10 megacycle resonance region and find out exactly what you've gotten. And when you put it into your 10 megacycle reference frequency oscillator and you pull it on frequency by beating it against the National Bureau of Standards, WWV, how far off to one side of resonance would you be pulling the crystal? Because you've already made that measurement. You know exactly what impedance you're going to get there, and therefore how good it's going to be at a frequency reference oscillator. So those are some of the unusual measurements I'm pretty sure that thing will let you do. So as I said, it really is Smith chart display, but an alphanumeric display, Smith chart or XY plotter. You'd have to do the plotting yourself. Let me drop. If you've ever gone through the training that used to exist 30 years ago, where people were being taught how to use the best precise instrument you had for impedance in those days, a slotted line. And with your slotted line, you measure the exact depth of the nulls, the exact number of centimeters on the slotted line of the nulls. Then you go into a dotted line in those days. If you go into a slide rule in those days, do a whole bunch of calculations, hope you don't get some of the steps backwards in order to measure exact impedance. You go through that process in that day and compare it to what you can do with your 4192, and you'll say, wow, I've eliminated almost all of those steps. The machine does all the work for me of measuring amplitude, phase, a reflection characteristic. See, what that machine's doing is it's putting a signal down the line. Let me drop it. And if the line was a perfect 50-ohm coaxial cable, for instance, with a perfect 50-ohm load, all the signal would go down that transmission line once, all of it would be absorbed, nothing would come back. Well, that's not the real world. Every reasonable thing you can put at the end of that transmission line is less than a perfect 50.00 ohm resistance. It's got some amount of reactance, some amount of resistance failure, some amount of capacitance, inductance, if you know what I mean. You're going to get a certain amount of reflected signal. And if that machine can precisely measure the magnitude of the reflection signal ratio and the exact phase angle of the signal being reflected, that information gives you a tremendous amount of information as to what is the nature of the impedance at the far end of that transmission line. And if you know the length of the transmission line where you've made the measurement, and there's ways you can calibrate that out so that you're making exact measurements of any component you can put at the far end. The only slight lack of idealness here, let me drop it. It sure would be nice if it would give you those displays that I described, Smith chart and XY, and if it went to higher frequencies. Now, the lack of going to higher frequencies isn't a showstopper. By way of you putting a mixer network in front of it, where, for instance, you want to make a measurement at 100 megacycles, and by way of a mixer and a local oscillator, which you can calibrate, you beat the 100 megacycle signal down to 10 megacycles, for instance, as an IF out of the mixer, and now your 4192 measures the phase angle and amplitude that IF sees. By way of properly calibrating that mixer, you can make 100 megacycle measurements. I didn't say it's easy, but people have done it. And so there's ways you can get around the fact that it doesn't go quite high enough in frequency. Let me see if John has any other suggestions of the exotic measurements he's made where he might even own a 4192. He may have made measurements that go beyond 13 megacycles with equipment. So you might have some suggestions, John, as to how John number one, KC2SHO, can use it. KC2WGB, what do you believe you might be able to do with that, John? K2RIW in the TechNet. You've got it, John, in Staten Island.
KC2WGB. Very good, Dick. Yes, in fact, there was one on a job. I've never used one myself. I've never owned one. But lovely instrument, worked very well, was used for measuring the quality and the output product of ceramic filter stacks, and you could actually map the skirts manually, of course, but it was a lot of energy and time that went into it, but it was extremely accurate, very good piece of equipment. Also, the one we had on the job had an option, I think it was an 03 option, which was an XY plotter where you could put a display on it to get a display that was useful, and it helped you in doing a quick and dirty adjustments and sort of squeezing it to where you needed it first, then take the hard numbers. But that's basically all the experience I've had with the Dick. Back to you, sir.
Was it only the special addition you add to it, John, which maybe gives you computer control that allows you to do the XY plotting? Is there a way you can talk to this with a computer that you know about? Probably requires an accessory, but maybe that accessory is not too difficult for John to buy or build. So tell me about computer control if you do know, and I believe it probably has a frequency synthesizer. If by the external world, with your laptop or your desktop computer, if you can talk to that frequency synthesizer and tell it what frequency to go to next, boy, an awful lot of fancy plotting almost comes out automatically. KC2WGB, K2RIW, go ahead, John.
KC2WGB, yes, it had GPIB input for 488, so you could operate it HP multibus, that is definitely a possibility. According to the options that are available, you can look, when you see, when you look in the back, you see that big Centronics plug, you know it has 488 capability. Let's see, what else did we do with that? They were running a step program through the 488 bus, which would look at a level and a frequency for a determinate amount of time, say 10 seconds. They would get those plot readings and go to the next. And it was not as friendly as the VNA, but you could do a lot with it. Just need a little patience. And again, it's all according to what you're used to.
Okay, John number one in New Jersey. Do you believe you've got that GPIB 488 bus on the back panel of your 4192? And if it's active, by you building or buying the right interface, GPIB interface, connected to your computer, and if you can now command the synthesizer step by step to go through frequency A to frequency B, you could do some very fancy plotting of filters and crystals and capacitors, anything in the world. You can now make a XY plot of its impedance, vertical versus frequency, horizontal, and to set up that capability would be an awful lot of fun. KC2SHO, K2LIW, go ahead, John.
So, I'm familiar a bit with GPIB and HPIB. I've used it a bit in previous lives. Not to the level of getting very deep with it, just using software that already existed. This device does have the HPIB Centronics connector on the back. So I guess that that may be enough. I know that some people said when GPIB came around that that was a little more, less HP specific, less, maybe more accepted across different brands. Maybe John could comment more on that. But anyway, it is the HPIB. It's there. So there may be the possibility for that. Also, I do see that many things reference the test fixture that goes with it. I unfortunately do not have the test fixture that goes with it. And I did see in previous searches there are maybe many different potential fixtures that you could add. But the manual references one in particular, the HP16047A, and that allows you to test radial and axial components. So that may be a good addition if I decide to play with this thing. K2RW, KC2SHO.
Comment, Dick?
Go right ahead, John.
Yeah, John, just be careful. The prices are very high on HP fixtures, they call them, because they're used across the board on many of their analyzers of all different types. It's basically the same thing, and they get a little pricey. Another thing you can look into, a lot of the GPIBs or the HPGIBs are available to run a plotter at the same time. So if you have the original manual for it, a lot of that information and some of the programming tips are included. So that's another good thing to look at. Back to you, Dick.
If I was doing a very precise measurement, I wanted 3 or 4 decimal places of accuracy traceable to the bureau, and I bought a fancy RF test fixture, which allows me to make radial and axial measurements on specific components, that purchase of that somewhat pricey fixture might be justified. When I'm down at a frequency as low as 13 megacycles, and that's a very relative word. See, I talk daily, so to speak, with the microwave people, the people who work above 1 gigahertz, and their feeling is that anything below 1 gigahertz is DC. That's just their opinion, okay? So bear in mind that I'm coming from that world to some degree. Down at 13 megacycles, the amount of stray inductance and capacitance you get is so small that if I made a piece of coaxial cable with a tiny set of alligator clips on the end of it that allowed me to connect to the component under test, the answer I would get down at 13 megs is good to two decimal places instead of three decimal places. And even the amount of error I've introduced, I could calibrate that back out by putting a standard component there and measuring what I appear to see versus what I think it really is. So do you need that fixture down at 13 megs? I think no. The stray inductance you're going to get from a clip lead at that frequency, a small clip lead, is so small. Look at it from a wavelength point of view. When the individual portions of your test equipment, let me drop this, when they start approaching a quarter wavelength, you start building up stray inductances and stray capacitances. Well, at 13 megacycles, what is a quarter wavelength? It's 20 meters. A quarter of 20 meters, that's what, 5 meters, 15 feet is a quarter wavelength. Your clip lead is extremely small compared to 15 feet, the quarter wavelength. Therefore, your chances of introducing stray inductance and capacitance is so small that we're getting academic here. So we amateur radio operators, when we get an answer that's close enough, that gets us into the ballpark, you don't exactly have to be at home plate all the time, but if you're in the ballpark, and we're very good at tweaking, you know, post-computer optimization, a little bit of tweaking will get you wherever you want to go. So that's an opinion on that. Let me drop.
And Dick, don't forget, the reason they have fixtures is reliability and repeatability of spectrum of the testing when you're doing the broad spectrum testing.
Yeah, if I'm working for the incoming inspection department or the final testing department of a very respected company making exotic test equipment, I would like the repeatability of that fixture. I don't think we amateurs need that. Now, I do remember a pleasant episode I had using a Hewlett-Packard 8566 spectrum analyzer. That spectrum analyzer had the HPIB parallel connector on the back panel. By way of the interface device into a desktop computer, I was able to tell that spectrum analyzer what frequency I wanted to go to next. So I wrote a computer program that talked to it, told it what frequency to go to next. The screen was digitized in 2 to the 12 power, if you know what I mean. There's the way it digitized the screen horizontally and vertically. So the GPIB took the commands I gave it. The analyzer went to those frequencies sequentially. Every piece of data it measured came back out of that connector into my computer, and therefore my computer did these beautiful plots of passband, and I was actually making a measurement. Let me drop. I was making the measurement of a countermeasures jammer, and we wanted to know how many milliwatts per megahertz it was putting across a particular frequency region. And so we gathered that data in a statistical manner on this random noise generator that had to make a spot of a particular width and a particular amplitude and a particular ripple of amplitude across that spot. So this machine automatically did that. So talking to and from that HPIB connector with the computers that were available on the desktop, all this took place in roughly 1995, allows you to make some very beautiful plots. So sounds to me like you've got that capability if you want to use it. KC2SHO, K2RIW. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, really good. Glad I brought it up. I've been reading about it and trying to comprehend its capabilities. It's good to hear everything that men of your caliber have to say about it. I'll probably keep it. I mean, for the price, it would be hard to get rid of it. It's something I think I might want to play with someday. And your comments about the test fixture make me even more optimistic, because I was looking at $500 for that fixture, or maybe four if you found it for less. But you never know. And I never went back and contacted the guy to see if maybe he still had it. When I bought it, it was something I found. It sounded like a decent price. I went home. I started reading the manuals. I said, I should go back down there and with some part number listings of these test fixtures and or ask him at least to show me and see if they were around, you know, but I never did. Of course, I could still check. You never know. He might still have accessories that he didn't know what he had. Someone who bought things as part of a lot that wasn't really his business and was just looking to get rid of it, so who knows, he might still have something there. Very interesting, and I will close with a final comment. I've been working 6 meters here, and local here, I've got a gentleman who I've been talking to quite often, AA2UK. I want to make sure that you know that he says hello. AA2UK Bill, he says hello, and he says you should know who he is, so there you go. K2RIW, KC2SHO.
The comment, Dick?
Go right ahead, John.
Yeah, Dick, what you mentioned before, at that frequency, it is very easy for him to build a test stand with a simple base. You could use marble or any type of rigid material. You could even use a laminate of any type. And some stiff rods coming up. Maybe you can get some bronze welding rods and cut them maybe 3 inches. Put 2 alligator clips on there. As long as the spacing remains the same and you mount the component at the right height off of the substrate, you should have good repeatability. That's what I've done in building some fixtures that work very well at those frequencies. Back to you, Dick.
Sounds good, John. The AA2UK, Bill Lentz, Elwood, New Jersey. Trying to remember when he and I had a face-to-face the last time. And N2ZYA is his old call letters. Okay, it's been a while since he and I have seen each other face-to-face. And I do run into a problem, a double problem, John, and that is I've got a little bit of facial amnesia. I'm not very good at remembering people's names. The guy who was really good at that was Harry Daniels, N2UK. Can't remember his older call letters. Well, he could remember everybody's name and call letters and the name of their children and so on. He would meet them 10 years downrange, recognize the face, immediately come back with the call letters and say, how's your daughter Julianne doing? How the hell he remembered all that, I don't know. I'm very poor at that. On top of that, I run into another problem. You take, for instance, on quite a few occasions, I've given a talk at, say, the Central State VHF Society or the New England Weak Signal Society. Let me drop them. And on occasion, there's 50 people in the room, so to speak. And 5 years later, I'll meet a guy who says, yeah, you know me. I was in that meeting with those 50 people. I was the guy in the back of the room with the red hat. For him to remember me was easy. For me to remember him, because he happened to ask a question 10 years ago. I'm not that good. So, you gotta be careful. For the people who I don't remember, try not to be insulted by it. It's a failure on my part. Give me a couple of words that you happen to know of what the interface was between me and Bill Lentz, AA2UK, John. KC2SHO, you may tickle my memory, K2RIW in the tech net. Is he a VHF, UHF operator? I'm slowly remembering him, yes. I think he's in southern New Jersey. Yes, I've talked to him quite a few times on 432, probably on 10 gigs. It's slowly coming back. Thank you, John.
Yeah, you've got it right from the little bit I know. I may have some notes here from our conversations. But yeah, he prefers VHF and up. He has worked 10 gigs. He used to have a rover with many bands on it. And I also know that he has a RIW amplifier that he says, unfortunately, the mice got to, but he still has it. So that's about the most I know about him and his interface with you. I haven't really pinged him too much, but one night when he's over, or if he gets more, he's moved to a location where he's a little bit antenna challenged now. But I think he's working on getting some things up. But when he gets it up, I'll make the note available to him. Maybe he'll give you a shout over here. Or next time he's over, I'll hand him the radio. Maybe he'll find you. He did shout once, but you weren't out there. Oh, real good. Excellent conversation. I'm looking forward to trying this equipment out further, understanding more about what it can do, and love the ideas about the test fixture. That's a real game changer, and that makes me want to keep it even more. And I've got a whole new workbench that gives me a lot more room. So I'm looking to make some of this stuff happen, get myself more educated. This has always been my real passion, and we're gonna we're going to chase it as far as we can. K2RIW, KC2SHL.
It turns out that Bill and I, AH2UK, he was the guy who I was always looking for on 10 gigahertz for that section, that particular grid square in southern New Jersey. And I made sure I got a hold of him while he was there. He had a nice tower, a nice setup down there. It was unfortunate they had to move away from there. And I hadn't been on 10 gigahertz for 10 years. So that's the last time Bill and I probably had a real QSO. 10 gigs 10 years ago. And I'm dreaming about getting that equipment back in operation. It was my favorite frequency to date. And I dream about even higher frequencies. So that's why it took me so long to recall Bill. You did say you had two questions, John. We got a little bit of time tonight. You want to start telling us the beginning of your second question? KC2SHO, K2RIW in the tech net.
Yeah, sure, why not? I always try to think of questions, and sometimes I write them in the logbook here. Things I could ask the TechNet just in case, well, like what happened tonight. If there's a lull, I don't always try to jump in and be the first, or especially being on the IRLP node, it's hard to jump in there and know that you've got it. But when times are slow, it makes it a little easier to jump in, throw a question out. So I always try to keep a few in the quiver, if you will, or in the chamber. The other question was, in many times you've described what's happening in the whole transmission system, let's say radio, antenna tuner, transmission line, antenna, when we're transmitting. But I'm not so sure I've heard your words on what's happening in the reverse direction. When the signal's coming into my antenna, and I have the antenna, the transmission line, the tuner matched to the frequency, and the radio. What's going on then? What's going on in the reverse direction? I don't imagine there's any surprises there, but it's just maybe I just haven't heard the words, and you're so good at explaining these things that I thought maybe it would be nice to hear what you have to say about it. I hope that's not too simple or too redundant for the net here. K2RIW, KC2SHL.
It's a darn good question, John. The strongest piece of information that's not common sense about radio frequency antennas and transmission lines and antenna tuners and so on, the thing that's hard to believe is they do 99.99% reliability of something called the law of reciprocity. In other words, whatever standing wave ratio, insertion loss, efficiency, gain, pattern, effective capture area, all of the parameters you can measure of a transmission system, every one of those parameters will be identical when you go back and receive through that exact same system. There are very few exceptions to that. If I put an amplifier in that transmission line, yes, now I have non-reciprocity. If I put a circulator in that transmission line, I have non-reciprocity. But if I put a filter, say for instance a duplexing filter, it will obey reciprocity. So all passive linear components, antenna tuner, filter, transmission line, duplexing filter, balancing device, and the antenna, they all obey reciprocity. So We always talk about the effective capture area of an antenna when it's receiving. It's hard to believe. You've got the exact same effective capture area when you're transmitting. I'm going to give you an example of that. Antenna I know very well, because I've made lots of measurements over the last 30 years, is the so-called RIW-19 insulated Yagi for 432. Roughly a 13-foot long boom. 19 elements on it. The elements all go through the boom with the shoulder bushings so that all the elements are insulated from the boom. That antenna has something very close to 15...